It's time for Sounding Off with Phil Goff.
Kia ora, Phil.
Morena, Zoe. How are you?
I'm well. How are you?
Good, good. And Happy New Year to you and all the listeners. Although I say Happy New Year, it's the 19th.
Yeah.
we're more than halfway through the first month of the year and it'll just race by.
Gosh, but, it does go quickly.
I hope everybody had a good break and... I've been back at work, I think, just a week and a half. It's a little bit tough after you're used to not getting up at 5 o'clock in the morning every morning.
But yeah.
There's work to do. And we should all be pleased that, we're still COVID-free, and that's really important.
Mm.
And that we'll have a new president this week in the United States. That's also very important.
Yes.
So the year's started off okay, at least.
Well, over the summer, something that a lot of people have been concerned about is the Auckland beach water quality. You know, we pitch ourselves as a nation as this clean, green, 100% pure New Zealand, but one of our many environmental problems that's affecting our city is beach water. New data from the Herald shows that our 10 worst beaches were unswimmable for an average of 1 to 2 days a week in 2020, Herne Bay being the worst. How did we get here to the point where so many of our city beaches are polluted to the point that they're unsafe for us to enjoy in summer?
Yeah, well, let's get it in context. They are generally, as they have been for 115 years, unsafe to swim after you've had heavy rainfall. And the reason for that is because in the older suburbs of the city, they mixed in the stormwater with the wastewater. So every time it rains and the wastewater spills off our roofs into the stormwater, into the wastewater, it overflows. Now, we've begun a huge program. We're literally spending billions of dollars to clean that up, and we'll clean it up 20 years more quickly than what was going to be the case before the long-term plan, which I put in place in 2018. So what have we got? We've got the Central Interceptor, which is a 14.7-kilometre-long tunnel that's 4.5 metres wide and tall enough for a giraffe to stand in. That the tunnelling starts next month. We've got the shafts put down at Mangere at the wastewater treatment end. We've got the shafts put down in Mount Roskill, and that will cut by 80% the wastewater overflows from the Western Isthmus area. We're also looking in the current long-term plan at extending that clean-up to cover areas like the Manukau and the Eastern Isthmus area, where we still have that problem of wastewater. We're putting huge efforts into tracking down illegal connections. Sometimes people connect their wastewater into stormwater, and we find that out when we do the fecal water counts. And the important thing that we did back in 2018 was bring in SafeSwim, which tells us day by day where it's safe to swim and what the quality of the water is, with precision that is better than, I think, any other country in the world, and certainly better than any other city in New Zealand. So, we are highlighting what the quality of water is. We're spending huge amounts of money. The water quality targeted rate adds another $450 million into doing that separation work. And some of those top 10 beaches, like Herne Bay, we are spending literally hundreds of millions of dollars on that now, ensuring a clean-up. But this problem took a century to create, and it's going to take 10 years to clean up. But we've started that work, we're making the investment, and we will be making a huge difference.
With that timeline of 10 years, is there any way to save the permanently closed beaches in the city, such as Cox's Bay and Westmere or Te Rangi Beach, or is the main focus the beaches that are still swimmable partly?
Well, those beaches that are permanently closed, many of them, such as Cox's Beach and Motions Creek and around there, they're the ones that will benefit most from the Central Interceptor, which means that, I'm just trying to remember what the figures were. There were something like 200 overflow points on the Western Isthmus, and that will reduce to probably 6 to 10. They were overflowing sometimes, 20 or 30 times a year. That will be reduced to a small number of beaches that may overflow overflow a couple of times a year. So that's where the 80% figure comes from. It will be a dramatic improvement, but it's also a big investment of money, as you can see. And that tunnelling machine I launched just before Christmas, it's all set and ready to go. The tunnelling, obviously, it takes time. You can't make engineering go faster than it's capable of going. But that'll be complete by, I think, 23, 24, somewhere around there.
Mm. On that note of funding for this project, a $1.6 million rates rise is now being fast-tracked by politicians. How will this rates rise affect the average household in Auckland?
Well, it's not being fast-tracked by politicians. It's being introduced by the Watercare Board, which is an independent council-controlled organisation set up by government legislation to make its own decisions. That's not to say that when they suggested there'd be a double-digit increase in water rates, I said, hey, this is your decision, but actually what you should have done, you've kept water rates lower than they ought to have been for your investment needs for 10 years, and now you're going to have a huge increase. It was going to take it up to about 12%. I said it's got to be lower than that, but it will still be significant, and the Watercare Board has voted a 7% increase for this year and next year, and a 9% increase for a number of years after that. And while I don't, I wish they'd done it in a different way, that they'd done it more gradually rather than, undercharge and then suddenly say, oh, we've got to catch up now, we've got all this infrastructure work to do. They do have that work to do, and it is really important. The Central Interceptor is one of those things that I've just talked about. We're spending a quarter of a billion dollars this year on improving the strength of our water supply, mainly from the Waikato, but also from other dams. So all of those things are that the piping system in the central city is over a century old, and that means that they're suffering leaks of about 13%. That's all got to be renewed. There can be criticism that earlier water authorities should have moved more quickly on these things, but you can't criticise the fact that this work needs to be done now. It does need to be done now. We do happen in Auckland to have the best quality water of anywhere in the country, probably amongst the lowest price in the country, and the best wastewater treatment. So there are good things that Watercare and some of their predecessors have done, but there's been underinvestment for far too long, and this is catch-up. And as you started off this interview by saying, do we want to have clean beaches that don't have wastewater running out over them when it rains? And the answer to that's got to be yes. And then the answer is, do you need to spend the money to do that? And the answer to that is yes. And where does that money come from? And it can only come from you and I and all the people that live in the city. It's our city. We've got to take responsibility for the cleanup.
Mm. I definitely agree with you that this is an issue that really does need to be solved. But I think the cost of living in Auckland is already so high, and for some lower income households that rates rise doubling over 10 years is going to be very difficult. As the cost of living in Auckland increases, can we expect to see the minimum wage increase as rates and the other cost of living also go up?
Yeah. Well, we've certainly, insofar as council can affect that for our own employees, we've certainly brought in the living wage for our own employees. That's important. And to do credit to the Labor government, they've also sharply lifted the minimum wage, and they've also lifted the level of income for beneficiaries. Now, some people will say that's not enough. Other people will say that's too much. But I think you have to look after your lower income people, because they're the people that feel the squeeze. We have to have a fairer society, and I absolutely support, a range of measures that are being introduced at the moment to make sure that, every kid that grows up in our community gets a fair chance in life, and not just the kids who happen to have chosen the right parents. And of course, I say that ironically. Mm. We don't choose our own parents. It's a lottery, what family we're born into. But we want to make sure that everybody can, get a fair go in life and a good start. So those sort of changes, Zoe, are really necessary, and I absolutely endorse them, and would encourage the government to do it, including the last couple of days I've spent looking around at social housing projects, and we're building social houses at a rate we've never built before, but the backlog is so huge that we've still got a massive problem, which includes the problem of homelessness. But at least the problem has been recognised, and we're starting to make some progress and some really good quality social housing being built around the place with, you know, the concept of developing communities and not just building structures.
Right, well, we'll move now to our final topic, which is Eden Park. It's now been granted permission to hold music concerts, which some people have been pushing for quite some time and others have not. They've been really against it. What were some of the reasons behind this decision to give Eden Park the okay to become a music venue? And what do you see as some positive outcomes that we can expect from this?
Yeah, well, look, under the Auckland Unitary Plan, the major planning document that was passed in 2016, it granted Eden Park the right to have 6 concerts a year. But because they had to get separate planning approval for each concert, you were talking about a huge sum of money that they were spending, and they couldn't plan ahead. When you're planning for a concert, you need to book and schedule and confirm that often, you know, a year, 2 years in advance, and they couldn't do that. So 3 independent planning commissioners have looked at that. They listened to submissions, about 3,200 submissions. 3,000 of those in broad terms were in support, and about 200 were in opposition. So the independent commissioners looked at the evidence, they listened to the submissions, they set in place certain conditions relating to noise and traffic management and consultation with the community. But certainly the stuff poll that was done around the Eden Park area showed that the majority of people that lived in the area, not necessarily the noisiest ones, but the majority, were quite relaxed about holding concerts there. Now, the advantage of concerts, it's probably quite a good venue for concerts. It's not necessarily, just going to add a whole lot of more concerts to cities, program, because some of the concerts that might have been held at, for example, Western Springs or at Mount Smart will probably go to Mount Eden. But it will be really important that the council works in conjunction with the Eden Park Trust Board in a coordinated way to schedule those concerts. As Aucklanders, we've got a big investment as a condition of the World Cup back in, 2011. We put something like $40 million into Eden Park in loans that or guarantees for loans that we've had to take over. So Eden Park's ability to gain more revenue means that it can meet its commitment without constant subsidisation from the ratepayer, and that will be a benefit to the ratepayer.
All right, well, we'll wrap up there. Thank you very much, Mayor Phil Gough.
Thanks, Zoe. Nice to join you again. I hope you had a good break and look forward to catching up next week.
Yeah, you also. Thanks very much. Have a good day.
Okay, cheers.
Bye.
That was Sounding Off with Phil Gough.